going to continue looking at the syntax of some of the C++ statements that you've been using in a little bit more detail. So the next statement that I'm going to look at is the assignment statement. Okay. The assignment statement is of the form, excuse me, let's say, weekly pay is assigned the value of 100. X is assigned the value of X plus 1. I think we've made it clear that this is not an equal sign or equality. Rather, it means from right to left, take whatever is on the right and insert it into the left. Okay? It's an action statement, not a statement of fact that two things are equal, but it's telling you to perform a task. So that if we had our variable X, which originally contained the value 5, and then we hit this statement, it says, take the value of X, which is 5, add 1 to it, which makes 6, and put that value back into X. So therefore, the value of X is currently going to be 6. Okay? Another thing you notice about an assignment statement is that it's destructive. That means that once we put a value into a variable, the value destroys whatever was there beforehand. Before there was a 5, the 5 is not there anymore. Now there is a 6. The assignment symbol that you use is actually an operator, just like a plus or a minus or a times. It tells us to do something. And as an operator, you recall that I showed you the hierarchy chart. Okay? The hierarchy chart tells us the order in which operations are done, and it also tells us how to go from left to right or right to left. Now, if you look at that hierarchy chart, you will see that assignment is low down on the chart, which makes sense. You've got to do the plus before you can do the assignment. If you have a complicated statement, X is assigned the value of 5 plus Y divided by 3 times 6, and we scan all these operators, of course we know we're going to do the division multiplication first, and those go from left to right. So we'll do this one first, then we'll do this one. The next thing is the plus, which also goes from left to right. And then we finally do the assignment. So the assignment is low down on the chart. However, what about right to left or left to right? Suppose we have an expression of the following. X is assigned the value of A, assigned the value of B, assigned the value of 6, which is a perfectly legitimate statement. Okay? When you look at this expression, they're all equal assignment operators, so they're all the same. Now, the rule is, unlike the plus, the divide, the times, these go from right to left rather than from left to right. So assignment is going from right to left, which means that first I will do this statement. That is, if I have a variable B, I will assign a 6 to it. Now, I want to pause for a moment and talk a little bit about a technical detail of how operators work. If I have 5 plus 6, okay, the operator looks at its two operands, performs the task, which is adds them, which is 11, and then we say that the operator returns the value. So in a sense, the operator is sending you back, or giving to you, the number 11. Which you then can do whatever you want with it. For example, you might then say, stick it into X. So we say that the operator takes its two operands and returns the value 11. That value is called an L value. Okay? Now, the same thing here. The operator assignment does its task, which is to put a 6 into B, which it did. But then it also gives us back that value. Just as the plus gave us back the value 11, the act of doing this returns to us the number 11. So in a sense, this whole expression now has the value 11. Which, not 11, I'm sorry, the value 6 in this case. Because we're putting 6 into B. So this whole expression is in fact the number 6. Which then, again, another assignment operator, takes the 6 and puts it into A. So if there's a variable A, it now has the value 6. And once again, after having done that, the equality returns to us the value that it assigned, which was 6. So that 6 then, because that's the value of this, is now assigned to X. And then if we had a variable X, now there's a 6 in it. And then, once again, this returns a 6, which we just ignore. We don't do anything with it. We just go on. Okay? So, assignment does more than just stick something into a variable. It actually gives you back that value. Now, very often you just tend to ignore that value. In the simple case where you had 5 plus 6, so the plus gave us back an 11, 11 stuck into X. In return, this actually gave us back an 11, which we did nothing further with it. Okay? But in this case, it gives us back the value, which can then be assigned to the next step along the way. And these go from right to left. Okay? Now, there is some variations on equality. On assignment. And let me show you some other forms. You might ask, how many different things can we say about assignment? Well, let's take a look. In addition to the ordinary assignment operator, which I just said is that symbol, we have another symbol that an assignment operator called plus equals. For example, if you say X plus equals 5, if you say that statement, that's identical to saying X is assigned the value of X plus 5. It's just a shortcut for doing that. Does everyone understand that? Same statement. Similarly, we have, just to give you the whole list, you have minus equals, divided equals, times equals, and mod equals. In each case, for example, if I say y times equals 10 plus j, that is equivalent to the statement, what do you think? It's assigned, the same thing as y is assigned the value of y times 10 plus j. Okay? That's what you meant, right? Good. Okay? So these are just shortcuts which you may or may not use. You don't have to use them. There's really no advantage to using this versus this. Although it's one of the words of the language, one of the operators in the language. They also go from right to left, just as the assignment operator does. Okay. Next. Some of you asked me, how do you raise a number to a power in C++? How do you take a square root of a number in C++. There are no operators for that. Rather, we call upon a library, a mathematics library, that has defined all of these terms. In order to use this, we need to include CMath in our library, in our set of statements, in addition to all the others that we're going to use. This includes a large collection of mathematical functions, such as SQRT. Okay? Remember, we've seen functions. We've written our own. We've written main. We've written prompt user and other functions. Every function we know has to have a name of the function, like prompt user or main, followed by a set of parentheses. Whether we put something in the parentheses or not, there's got to be a set of parentheses. In this case, we put things in the parentheses. For example, if I put the value 4 in there, the function computes the square root of 4, which of course is 2, which I can then, let's say, assign to x or do whatever I want to do with it. The thing that we stick in here is called the argument of the function. And of course, you're all familiar with that. It's the same exact terminology that you use in calculus or in algebra. F of x. You give me the value x, and I apply the function, whatever the function happens to be. X could be as complicated as possible. For example, maybe you want to have some function that calculates x as assigned the value of minus b plus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a, one of the roots of a quadratic equation. How would we write that in C? Once we include the math library, the C math library, then we would simply write this as x is assigned the value of minus b plus sqrt of, okay, now we need b squared, which we could write as, for now, b times b minus 4 times a times c. And we want to divide all of this, if I need to put the parentheses, another set of parentheses here, by 2 times a. Okay? So we have a function, sqrt. This is the argument to the function. It computes the value, sends it to the sqrt function. It does its thing, gives us back a number, the square root of this. Then we add that to minus b, and we divide that finally whole thing by 2a, 2 times a. Okay? There are several such functions. I'm just going to show you a few, but again, there are tables in the book where you can look them up, where you can Google them. The ones that you probably would want to use are sqrt, which is the square root, and finally POW, power, which takes two arguments. In other words, if I want to raise 5 to the 14th power, I would write that as POW, power, 5, 14. Okay? So that calculates, there you have two arguments to the function. EXP of something. EXP stands for exponential. Have you all taken calculus and know about E, this magic number E? That calculates E raised to the X power. This calculates X raised to the Y, and this calculates the square root of X. And of course, there would be such things as the sine of X and the cosine and the tangent and all the other wonderful trigonometric functions that you might need. Let's say you needed to calculate the cube root of an expression. Suppose I had the following. The cube root, okay, of 3 times x, let me write it algebraically, 3x plus 8. How would we express the cube root? Now, we don't have a cube root function to the 1/3. In other words, we would write this as POW. The first expression is going to be 3 times x plus 8, comma, 1/3. Now, as some of you may have found out when you're doing the assignment, what happens if you say 1 divided by 2? What's the value of 1 by 2? That appeared in all your programs. 1 divided by 2 is 0. And 0 times anything is 0, so you got all zeros. What we need to make sure is that we get a real number in there, like 1 point divided by 3. Okay? And the same thing is here. We would say 1, you can say 1.0 divided by 3.0 or 1 point, whatever, any combination that you want, as long as there's one real number, one number with a decimal point, so that it calculates 0.333 rather than 0. Otherwise, we'll just do raise it to the 0 power, and the value of the expression, of course, would be what? What would be the value of this expression if I did not have real numbers here? 1, because any number raised to the 0th power is always 1. So if you had just 1 divided by 3, the answer would be 0, power 0 is 1. Okay, so these little gotchas, you've got to be careful about them. But now we have functions in a library that has been designed for us, and we can use them as we wish. Any questions? A few other pieces of information that we need before we move on. Your program always is going to run under whose control? Who controls the program? Who controls any program you run? Well, not sort of indirectly. Yeah, I guess you are the ultimate master of the computer. But who loads up the program to run? Who sends things to the printer? Who is the program talking to? Well, the console is who we're sending it to, yes, but who controls the console? Who's running all the background tasks? What's running all the background tasks of the computer at this moment? You know, staring you right in the face. Windows. Right? The level, if you think about it, you have a computer which has a certain amount of hardware. Okay? Hardware is dumb. And the hardware is, so to speak, surrounded, much like an onion, by the operating system, the OS, which could be Windows, it could be Unix, it could be Linux, it could be the Mac operating system, that gives you the interface between you, the human being sitting out here, and the hardware, right? You don't talk to the hardware, even though when you talk to the keyboard, you're talking to, or move your mouse, you're talking to Windows. And Windows, in turn, talks to the hardware, vice versa. The hardware sends things to the operating system, which then sends them on for you to see on the screen. Right? So the operating system is in control. And when you run a program, let's say you just wrote your program that you've just written to me. So you're sitting there at the computer and you tell the program to start running. Okay? So your program, for a moment, so to speak, takes control of the operating system. Your program. Or, let's say you're doing a word processor. So you type in a word processor. You're talking, here's you. You're talking to whom? When you are using Microsoft Word. You're talking to Word, to the program. Word, in turn, talks to the operating system. The operating system, in turn, sends things to the printer, the screen, gets them from the keyboard, and so on. Okay? Layers upon layers. Okay? So when you are running your program, okay, in essence, the program sort of is in between you and Windows or any other operating system that you might happen to be using. There are times when, for example, your program takes control and starts ignoring you. Let's say you have an infinite loop that goes round and round and round. So the operating system is just sitting there, and the program is just telling it, print, 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 and never stops. We have to have a way of sort of telling the operating system, stop what you're doing. What do you do when a 3-year-old gets hysterical? Okay? I don't know if this is good parenting or not, but what do you do if the 3-year-old gets really hysterical? Give him a smack, and you stop. Right? That's probably not modern programming techniques anymore. Parenting techniques anymore. But it works. Okay? Well, the same way. We want to have a way of interrupting the program when it seems not to respond to us. And we do that by using some commands that override and talk directly to the operating system, Control C. Now, that symbol is not the caret. You know, that's on top of the number 6 or the hat, whatever you want to call it. It means hold the control key down and put in the letter C. Okay? That will interrupt. So if your program runs away and starts printing things on the console over and over and over, just seems not to want to stop, not paying attention to you anymore, and you want to kick it in the shin to say, stop what you're doing, Control C will abruptly terminate the program. If that doesn't work, then your only recourse is to kill the machine. Now, I don't think you should do that with your kids, okay? But when that doesn't work, you got to turn the machine off and then just reset it from scratch. And then you might lose information that you haven't saved, which is another good reason for saving your work before you run a program that may take control of a computer and then not respond, and then you'd have to turn the machine off and lose all your work that you haven't saved. So it's always a good idea to save your work before you run your computer, your program. But in any event, most of the time, Control C, okay, will interrupt the program. Next, you save a big document onto the disk. So it writes it out to the disk. Now, the details of what happens on a disk are somewhat complex. So let me give you a short example, a short thing of what's really happening when you save a file on a disk. If you have, let's assume we have a really large hard drive, okay? So let's, that's the physical, the platter upon which we're writing. As that spins, we're storing information on this. Let's say we have a term paper, my paper, which is saved on the machine. The disk is divided up into what we call sectors, chunks. Okay? And if this is a particularly big paper, it will fit at least several sectors, maybe even hundreds of sectors. So the computer will reserve a spot here, and a reserve a spot here, and a reserve spot here, and a reserve a spot here. And there is a section of the disk called the directory. And the directory contains the entry, my paper, the name of the document, which with a little pointer that sort of points it to the first sector. So your paper, part of your paper is stored here. When that gets filled up, the computer looks for another sector somewhere on the disk, fills up the rest of the paper, and sticks a little pointer. And then, if that's not enough, it finds another free sector. And then, finally, maybe it stores it here. How does it know that when it retrieves the paper, because when it retrieves the paper, it follows the arrows. You say, I want to print my paper. So Microsoft Word goes to the directory, finds my paper, which gives it this chunk, then this chunk, then this chunk, then this chunk. Okay? How does it know that there's nothing else? There's no more. How does the number 2 line at Flatbush Avenue know that when it gets to the junction, there's nothing more, it can't go further? There are no more tracks. That never stops trains from going when there are no more tracks, or cars going beyond where the road goes. So what physically stops them? At the end, you go look, you'll see, at the end of the track, there's a big rubber bumper. So you can't go any further. Okay? In other words, the rubber bumper sort of says, that's it, it's all over. Okay? In the same way, whenever you save a file anywhere on a disk, after it saves the file, it by itself sticks in a special symbol called Control Z. Automatically, anytime, whenever you save anything on a drive, anything in Windows, the very last thing on the long chain of sectors that make up your file is this Control Z. When it's reading the information off the disk and it gets to a Control Z, it knows that's it, it's all finished. What do you think would happen if by accident, somehow or other, a Control Z was put right there in the middle? Even though the whole thing is still physically stored on the disk, you would have lost the whole rest of the paper from here on in, because when it reads it, it would go from here to here to here and stop at this point. That's what we call a corrupted file. Sometimes you have a corrupted file and it can only read part of the file. Because somehow or other, a Control Z is an illegal character to appear anywhere but at the very end. Okay? Now, who puts the Control Z in there? Who puts the rubber track at the end of the trains? People who build it. Who puts the Control Z at the end of a file when you save a file, you write your term paper, and you say, save? The operating system does. But you don't have to put that in. In fact, you can't put it in because it's a character that's meant only to be placed at the very, very end. Okay?
Okay.
But that's well and good for files that are physical, files that exist on a disk. What about our virtual files? Okay. What about when we are reading in from, remember, the CN, the virtual file from the keyboard? Suppose you want to, you're typing in the computer, and you want to tell the computer, that's it, there's no more left to type. I'm finished. Control Z. You put in a Control Z. That's your way of signifying that the file is over. Normally, when you save something on the disk, you never put in the Control Z, because the computer does that automatically for you. But when you're sitting at the keyboard to keep an end in data, remember, that's a virtual file. All that information is going up in there, right? And at some point, you want to signal, I'm finished. Control Z. That's going to be very useful shortly. We're going to take advantage of that, which we haven't done yet. Now, this is true in... So, Control Z is called the end of file. In other operating systems, it's other characters. For example, in Linux and Unix, it's Control D instead of Control Z. But we're all using Windows here, at least most of us, and therefore we'll just remember Control Z. Okay. Let's look at another program. Okay. It's time to start writing another program. We have a lot of the vocabulary. There's more to learn. But at this point, you can write lots and lots of programs just by knowing the things that I've shown you so far. I think the clock is correct today, but keep an eye on your watches in case it's frozen today or whatever, not telling the right time. Let me know when I get close. Okay. Here's what we want to do. We have prepared for ourselves a whole bunch of numbers. Okay. 15, 85, 100, 90, and we want to find their average. Okay? So we'll state the problem as follows. Write a program that finds the average of an unknown number of positive numbers. Okay, we don't know how many numbers we have ahead of time. And we want to find their average. So, once again, you call upon the friendly Martian, and he or she has landed. What's the first thing you tell the Martian to do? Start. Excellent. Okay, tell me what to do. I'm going to sit here and wait until you tell me to do something. Even if it's wrong, tell me to do something. You know how many variables you need right now? So, I don't think so. So just tell me, let's do one at a time. We'll create them as we need them. So create a variable. You need a variable? What should we call it? What do you want to put into it? I don't like X, Y, Z. Why don't we call it number? You're not going to create a separate variable for each number up there, are you? Because you don't know, there may be 5,000 numbers. So you're going to create a variable. What? I don't know. We're gonna figure this. We're gonna deal with that issue. We're gonna talk to the Martian until we get it right. So I'm gonna create. I think it's fair enough. Let's create a variable called number. That's fair enough. And what are you gonna tell the Martian to do? But don't write this down yet, because we're gonna make several corrections here until we get it right. What are we gonna tell the Martian to do? Get a number. Can't say plug in the 15, because it doesn't know. It's not always going to be 15. Get a number. Okay, we can do that. Get a number. So I go, the Martian comes over, gets a number. Excellent. What do we want to do now? You're going to tell me to get another number? So I'm going to go over and get the 89, put it into number, and it's gone. So I don't think that's what we want to do. What our goal is? Our goal is to find the average. What do you do when you find an average? What do you do? What do you do to find an average? You add the numbers. Right? You add the numbers one at a time until there are no more. Okay? So maybe it would help if we had another variable called sum. Okay? So let's start again. Get a number. now say to me, add it into sum. Does that make sense? Yeah. Of course, there's nothing in sum right now. How can I add something into something when there's nothing there yet? So what should I do before I even start? Put a zero into sum. What do you do with a calculator? You zero, you clear it before, right? So the first thing I'm going to say is something like, sum is assigned the value of zero. In other words, I'm going to start with a variable called sum, even before I get the first number. Start with this, because that's what you got to do first. Put a zero into here. That's good. Then get a number. Put a 15 in there. How can I now say, given what you see here, that to add that into this? How can I say that? Number plus sum should be put into sum. Or you could have said, of course, you could have said sum plus equals number. But I don't like, you know, I didn't introduce that. Let's make it clear. What does this do? It takes the 15, whatever is a number, adds it to sum, 15 plus 0 is, and sticks it into sum. Did I succeed in adding the number into sum? Good. Do I need this 15 anymore for anything? No more, right? So now you can tell the Martian, get a number. So it picks up the 89. You know, and so I don't want to use 89 because I can't do the arithmetic. Let me put a 20 in there. Okay? I'm arithmetically challenged. So tell the Martian, get a 20. Get a number. So it gets the next number it finds and puts it into here. So far so good? Then you're going to tell me to do this again. By doing this again, what's going to happen? That's going to give me a 35 in here. Then, do I need the 20 anymore? So you'll say, get a number. Get 100. Do this again. That makes this. So far so good? Do I need the 100 anymore? Notice the point here. I only need one variable to hold the number, because once I stick it into here, once I add it into the sum, I no longer need the thing, so I can destroy it, you reuse it. Get a number. Picks up the 90. Adds it into this. Gives me 225. Right? Get a number. Now the Martian gets angry at you. Because there is nothing left. And you told it to get a number. It freaks. So of course we know how to handle this. How are we going to handle this? We'll put some number at the bottom, like a negative number. And we'll have a loop that says just get a number if the number is not negative. Right? We've done this. You just did that on an assignment. So we know how to handle, we'll write that loop in a minute. But basically we have a loop here. We do this, we check to see if it's minus, again, over and over and over again. So far so good? Okay, so now that I did this, what do I have to do now? Am I finished? What do you need to do? By what? You need to divide it by, what's that? I don't know what that is. I'm stuck. Marsh has to go back to Mars. What should we do? What do you think we should be doing that we left out? Well, what is it that we want to do? Not tell me how to do it, but what is it we want to accomplish? And how do you find out how many numbers there are? How do you find out as a human being? If I give you a bunch of things. If I ask you how many shoes you have in your closet, how would you come back and tell me how many shoes? You count them. That's the key word I'm looking for. Right? You count them. And when you count something, how do you count? By one. Very good. You add one every time. One pair of shoes, add another one to that. That's two pairs of shoes, add another one to that. That's three pairs, so on and so forth. Right? You add one. So maybe we need to think of having another variable. Let's call it count. Okay? Now what should we start count off with? Zero, right? You'll start counting before you counted anything. How many have you counted? None, right? So we're going to stick a zero into here. Okay. We've picked up a zero. We've put a zero in here. Now let's see what we can do now. Let's start from the very beginning. Okay. We put a zero into here. We put a zero into here. This is the beginning. Okay, what are you going to tell me to do? Start from the very beginning. Get a number. Excellent. I put it into here. Before I go further, what should I check to see? Not yet. I don't want to count it yet. I want to check to see what? Before I do the next step, I want to check what? Did I finish? Did I get to this number yet? In other words, did I pick up a negative one? If I pick up a negative one, there's no point in going on. I can finish the calculation. So let's write what you just told me to do. The first thing you told me to do was get a number. And then what is the next thing I just said we're going to do? We're going to check to see if the number is negative. Okay? If the number is greater than or equal to zero, what does that tell you? If that's true, the number is greater than or equal to zero, what does that tell you about that number? You want to use it. So now tell me what you want it to do. So this is greater than zero, we want to use it. What should I do with it? Recall. First I'm going to do this, which puts the 15 into here. And since this is a number we're going to use it, what do we want to do now? Since it's a good number, what do we want to do with this? Count it. And how will I count it? By adding, very good, by adding one to this. How can I say that? Say that to me in C++. How does one say add one to count? Count should be assigned the value of count plus one. So what is count right now? Add one to it is, put that into count. I got a number. Now what do you want me to do? Well, let me write those things that we just told me to do. So let me, where it's true, I'm going to say sum, assign the value of sum plus number, and count, assign the value of count plus one. And what do I want to do now? I don't know. Get it? I won't know until you tell me to get it. And do it again. Get a number. In other words, what you're telling me to do. Don't want to go back to here. You don't want to set everything back to zero. You want to go back to here, right? So we get it. Let's follow that loop. There's a loop there. Is there a way out of that loop, by the way? Yeah. So let's get a number. So we pick up the 20. Okay, is that greater than or equal to zero? Yes. So it says to say sum is number plus sum, makes this 35. Count is count plus one, makes this into a 2. We've got now a second number. Okay, what do we do now? Follow the loop. What's the loop say to do? Get a number. What's it say in the loop to do next? That's not what it says to do in the loop next. I just got the number. No, that's not what it says to do in the loop next. I just did this. What's the next thing? Check to see if it's greater than or equal to zero. Well, is it? So now I will do sum equals number plus sum, which puts a 135 into here. Now I will do count as count plus one, which puts a 3 here. And what do I do next? Look at the flowchart. That's what it's there for. What's next on the flowchart? Come on, guys. In kindergarten, they can follow. I'll tell you to put your finger on it. Get a number. Okay? So that puts that into here. What is the next thing on the flowchart? Check to see if it's greater than or equal to zero. Is it? Yes. So what does it say to do next? Speak up. I can't hear you. Right. Okay. So that gives me a 225. And what does it say to do next? Add one, do this, count the count plus one, which makes this 4. And what does it say to do next? get a number. So I pick up the minus one. What does it say to do next? Check to see if it is. Is it? No. So what do you want to do at this point? If this is false. Stop? What was our goal? Find the average. How am I going to do that? With the information on the board, how am I going to find the average? Divide, exactly. I'm going to have another box. Shall we call it average, maybe? And I'm going to say, average is assign the value of what? Help me out here. Okay, so now I go here and I take the sum, which is 225, divided by 4, and I get 56.5, or some such thing like that. Are we done yet? Think carefully before you speak. What do we need to tell the Martian to print out? What do we want it to print out? The average. And maybe some nice message. And then what do we want to do? Stop. End. Now you have the flowchart. Can you follow that flowchart? At home, write down some numbers, like the grades you hope to get in this class. 100, 95, 100, yeah, sure. 45, 60, minus 1. And make all of these boxes and then put your finger on that. If you can't follow that, we got serious problems. Okay? I know a lot of you shy to speak up. Okay? But don't be shy. Let's have a party, you know? Speak up. Follow through and make sure that you end up with that number in there. Does everyone see now that this works? There are two very important techniques you've just learned. One is how to calculate a sum. Okay? By doing something like this, sum equals sum plus number, an accumulator. We've learned how to accumulate the sum. And we've also learned how to count things by saying count equals count plus one. That's called incrementation. To increment the variable means to add one to it. In fact, this is such a common thing, count equals count plus one, that we have a special symbol for that. We can say count plus plus. That means add one to count. And you can also write it, some people write it, as plus plus count, which does the same thing at this point. It's two different ways of writing the same thing. It adds one. Feel free to use either one of those two, or count equals count plus one. But it's so important, this is incrementation. We do this so often that we have a special symbol just to help us do this. Okay? And of course, you learn another important lesson here. That before you did something like sum equals number plus sum, what do you have to do at the very, very beginning? Before you do sum equals sum, the very first time, what do we have to do before we even started? Look at the flowchart. What's the very first thing we did with sum? Even before that, we had started at zero. What was the very first thing we had to do with count before we used it? Put it to zero. That's called initialization. You need to initialize variables before you use them. Why did I not initialize the variable number? Well, I really did. When I told you to get a number, that was the first time I stuck a number in there. Before you use a variable, there's got to be something in it. Before I could say sum equals sum plus number, I have to put a zero first into sum. Before I say count equals count plus one, I've got to start off count with zero. Before I can look at number, I've got to get the first number and stick the 15 into it, or whatever number it was. Everybody with me? At this point, they're exactly the same thing. It just means add one to count. It's incrementation. The plus plus is called the incrementation operator.
So when it comes to writing, we have to write it?
No, you can write count because count plus one. They're exactly the same. Either way, you know, it's like style. Are we using any math things here? Are we using things like square roots or powers or signs? We're just using ordinary plus and minuses. Don't need to see math.
Okay.
Only if you want to take advantage of those fancy functions do we need the CMath. Are we okay? Everyone understands the logic of the program. Convince yourself of that at home with a bunch of numbers. Once we've written this, now we can turn this into a C++ program. Okay, so I believe you have such a program on your handout. And it's probably called Average 1. As usual, we'll improve things. And we'll already improve it. We know that, by the way, before we read a number, what should we always do before we read the number? Before we say C in, we should always do what? Ask the user, print out a message to please put in the next number. Done that, you've just handed an assignment that does that. So therefore, let's look at our program from scratch. One is, the name is going to call it average one, the date, and the description is finds the average of a list of numbers using the trailer method. What does that refer to when I say using the trailer method? Putting in the... I can't hear you. The while statement, but in particular, what are we looking for in that while statement? Why is it called trailer? No, that would be called loop. Why is it called the trailer method? What's on the board that's a trailer? The minus one. A trailer is behind the car, right? You drag a trailer. Okay, it trails at the end. We're using a fake number at the bottom, at the end, at the trailer, to signal in the loop, the while loop, when there are no one left. So you're right, the while loop, but in the while loop we're checking for a minus one, so that's a trailer method. That's called the trailer method. Putting in a fake number at the end is called a trailer. It lets us know, when we check, whether it's the last number. Good. Okay. We include our libraries. We say using namespace standard. Let's quickly define a prompt user function. You've done this before. Void prompt user. Okay, cout endl, please enter a number. Cout endl, in order to stop, enter a negative number. End prompt user. Right? That should be clear at this point. You've probably done that in your assignment. All that's going to do is print a message on the screen whenever we call upon it to do so. Yes? The actual program is over here. First, let's get rid of this stuff that we don't need. So, there's our int main. Now we needed a bunch of variables. Okay? So we needed a variable called count, or I happen to call it counter here. Is that going to have a decimal point or not? No, it's counting. So I'm going to call it an integer. And then we're going to have average and number and sum. All are going to be floats. Because there's no reason those numbers can't be get partial credit, you know, get 95.3 on a test. Okay? So we have our variables all taken care of. The next thing I show here, if we're going to use this function, then we need to have what is this line called? Who remembers what that line is called? Void prompt user, the function prototype. Very good. Okay? We have the function prototype. Remember that you could put the function prototype here, or some people just put all the function prototypes over here. It would work exactly the same way. Okay? Everybody with me? If we have a function in a program, we got to have a function prototype for it. If we have a variable in a program, we have to declare the variables. Same point. Before we do anything, before we use them, they've got to be declared. Okay. The next two lines, you recall, are just cookbook at this point, and they're just the lines that tell us what. What do those two lines tell us to do? I think some of you have used that in your programs. It tells us to round off all the numbers, but when we print them, only when printing. It only has effect on printing. It has no effect on the actual calculation. It simply says that later on when you're going to print, round them off, in this case, to one decimal point. So you just cookbook, stick that in. If you want two decimal points, put in two. Okay? Nothing has happened yet. We're still up in the start box. Okay, now we're ready to move. First thing we did was, my finger is on the flow chart. Sum equals zero, count equals zero. Does it make a difference the order of these two? No, because they don't affect one another. So I did that. Counter equals zero, sum equals zero. Next thing was to do to get a number. Before we get a number, what do we want to do? Just to help us out? We want to print the message on the screen. So we prompt the user, and then we say, see in number. That's this. See in number. Here we are. Everybody with me? And what's the next thing? The loop. While number is greater than equal to zero, what's the next thing? I use plus plus counter, which is count equals count plus one. And sum equals sum plus number. Correct? And then what do I want to do? Get another number. So I prompt the user again and say same number. That brings us back to the while. I'm just now back here. Check to see if the number is greater than or equal to zero. If it is, counter plus plus, add one to the counter. Sum equals sum plus counter. That's this. Get back to here. Finger on the flowchart, as I say, first grade. Okay. Prompt the user. Get the next number. Get back to the loop. Eventually, we're going to pick up a number that's a negative number. In which case, this will be false. So we'll drop out. We won't go in here. We'll drop out. Calculate average is sum divided by counter. See out the average is average. And the next statement is stop, is the system pause, business, and the return exit success, return zero, and it's over. Okay, you have this program, you have the flowchart at home. Not only should you go with the numbers in the flowchart, make sure you can see the connection between them. This will run now. So if I run it, please enter a number in order to stop. It already did the sum equals zero, count equals zero behind the scenes. So I put in the number 100. Then please enter a number in order to stop, enter a negative number. I'm going to put in the 95. Then it's doing all the other things behind the scenes because I didn't ask it to print it. 100. Then put in the 45. Put in the 60. Put in the minus 1. That drops us out of the loop. The average is exactly 80. Press any key to continue, and we're done. How are we doing? Are we all reasonably comfortable? When you do assignments, do not wait to 3 days before an assignment is due to start doing it. Because then, there's not enough time for you and I to have this conversation, questions back and forth. Start it the day I give you the assignment, the day later. If you get it done early, well, that's great. But if you start 3 days before an assignment is due, and these things are very unpredictable, because sometimes a little trivial mistake can drive you nuts. Somebody, I won't mention whom, had a program in which they left out these two little innocuous parentheses. Okay? And they couldn't figure out why you got a message that said invalid function declaration. What the heck are we talking about? You know who you are, whoever it is. Okay? That can make you very frustrated, not sleep at nights, which I wouldn't want to be blamed for. All we got to do is stick that back in. Something as trivial as that, which you don't really see at first glance, and now the program will compile properly. Zero errors, zero warnings. Start early. I can't tell you enough. It's very frustrating. You can tear your hair out sometimes. Okay? Especially when there's a deadline doing a day later. Okay. Next. So everyone's going to go home with this assignment. You're going to take a bunch of numbers, go through the flowchart, then you're going to take the program, make sure that you understand how they match line by line. And now we want to throw a problem into this. What happens if the problem changes a little bit? And the problem isn't any longer find the average of an unknown number of positive integers. So as I take out one word, and I say, find the average of an unknown number of numbers. And I don't tell you they are positive. Will this work? Will this work? Suppose the numbers are as follows now. Will this program now find the average? Why not? As soon as it picks up the 95, it'll stop dead in its tracks. Right? Because we told it to stop when it gets to a negative number. We use the trailer method. Our trailer was a negative number because the original problem said that negative numbers aren't real here. But now that I say negative numbers are allowed, this is a problem. What's particularly the problem? The problem is, this is no longer a trailer. This could be a valid number. Maybe you got a negative one on the test. What do I do? How do I signal that there are no more numbers to come? To what? And that's the problem. Yes, change the trailer. But to what? But the Martian is expecting to get A, and if it eats a character, when you told it to get a number, it will choke. And unless you run through a Heimlich maneuver, it'll be dead. You'll be known as the first person to kill a Martian. Can't tell it to put in characters because when it gets it and tries to eat it in a number, it'll freak. So we're back to the problem. We got to find another trailer. And the problem is that there isn't any. Because if you say all numbers are permitted, then I can't find an illegal number. Because all numbers are permitted. I still want to find a trailer, but I don't know what to do. See the problem? Okay? Now, if you can think back, approximately 15 minutes ago, I told you something about there being a character that can never be legitimate value. Because it always... you're driving on... When you're on a train, you'd better never find rubber bumpers in the middle of a train track. Because that can... You can find garbage on the floor, you can find even people on the floor, okay, in New York City, but you can't find rubber bumpers in the middle of a train track. Because a rubber bumper can only appear at the very, very end. What character can never, ever, ever be a valid character? Control Z. So I can always put a Control Z at the end. Now, we have two issues, which is what I want. No, Control C will interrupt the program. Control Z just says data is over. Okay? Now, we got several issues. First of all, clearly, I need to do something about this. This is no longer going to be the thing that we're going to use to check to see whether we've reached the end. Because we're not looking to see whether the number's negative. Somehow or other, we have to see, is the thing you've read a Control Z? I'll solve that problem in a minute. There's another issue. How do I get the controls? How do I enter the Control Z? Well, if I do it from the keyboard, I do it by Control Z. Type it in. No problem. Just like I type the -1, I can type Control Z just as easy. What happens if the data is now not stored, is not coming from the keyboard, but it's coming from a file? Right? We have thousands of data. All the students in the college, we want their average. How do I put a Control Z in there? The answer is I don't. Whenever you save a file, the system automatically, remember, puts a Control Z. So when you created the data file and you saved it, automatically there's a Control Z in there. You've never seen it, it's invisible, but trust me, it's there. So if we're doing it from the keyboard, I'm going to just put a Control Z in when I'm ready. And if I'm going to get my data from the file, as you now know how to do because we just did that last time, I gave you a handout on how to read from a file, right, remember? Then you don't need to put the Control Z in there because it's automatically there when you created that file. Everyone got the idea? Okay? So when you save a file, there's a Control Z automatically at the end. Every single file you create and save has Control Z at the very end. And if we're sitting for the keyboard, then we'll put a Control Z in ourselves. That solves our find another trailer. Because we can always use Control Z as a trailer because Control Z can never be a real number. Can never be a real character. It always marks the end. So all that's left is to do two very little things. One is, instead of saying, in order to stop, enter a negative number, what are you going to change this message to read? In order to stop, enter a Control Z. That's easy. And now, I need to change this while loop. All I need to do is to find something to put here instead of that. And I'm done. And this program will now work for any number. Not letters. Because the module will still choke, but letters. But at least any numbers. Okay, so let's look at that program then. So if you will now turn to average 2, not surprisingly. Okay. Everybody have that? The descriptions, find the average of a list of numbers using the end of file method. Okay, and I'll show you how to do that right now. I changed, in order to stop, press Control Z. This is what you just told me to do that. That's no different. And the only other change, if you look at the program, is this line. Let's pull that line apart and see what that means. Okay, let's start with Cin. What is Cin? What is it? What is Cin? Exactly. It's the place you get your input. It's a name of a file, of an input file, a collection of information. So Cin is a name of a file. And when the conductor is riding the train, he's always looking out to see if he is approaching the end of the tracks, right? We have a method, you've seen this notation before, dot EOF, that is a method. Just like we had a method open and close, we now have a method called EOF. EOF looks at a file and says, yes or no, true or false, you are finished. You hit a Control Z. The rubber bumper is up ahead. EOF is a method. It's a file method. It's applied to a file, any file. In this case, the file is called Cin. It says to Cin, are we done? Is there a Control Z up ahead? And if there is a Control Z, EOF method says true. We're at the end of the file. And if there is no Control Z up ahead, then it responds with, what do you think? False. Okay? So, when we look, when we're up to here, and we look at this, will EOF be true or false when we're up to here? We're up to here? We're at the end of the file already? EOF, is it true or false? It's false. It's not the end of the file. So we want to continue. That's why it says, while not cin.eof, continue. Again, when we're up to here, what is EOF, true or false? False. So we want to continue, don't we? So while not end of file, continue. Remember that exclamation point means not. Now we got to here. EOF, true or false? True. So not true is, something is not true, what is it? False. Therefore we don't continue. And we're done. Does everyone see how that works? Again, we're going to be here at the beginning. We're going to say, while it's not the end of the file, isn't that even in English what we want to do? While it's not the end of the file, we want to proceed. But as soon as that's false, we want to stop. So up here, EOF is true, not true is, I'm sorry, EOF here is false, not false is, so we continue. Over here, EOF is false, not false is true, so we continue. Over here, EOF is still false. Not false is true, so we continue in the loop. We get to here. EOF is now true. Not true is, so the while loop is now false. We don't continue. We drop out of the loop and calculate the average and we're done. Okay? So we've solved what to put in there. It even reads like English. Let's read what it says to do. It says, get a number, right above where the color is now. Get a number. And then it says, while we have not reached the end of the file, continue. That's the not, end of file, continue. Okay, technically, it's the method EOF is asking CIN, are you at the end? Is there a control Z ahead? If there is, it's true. We're done. If it's not an end of file ahead, it's false, and we stop. So if I run this program now, looks exactly the same as before. Please enter a number in order to stop. Press Control Z. I'll put in the 100. Again, I'll put in the negative 95, which the old version would have stopped dead right here. Put in another 100. Put in a negative 45. Put in a 60. And put in a now. What do I want to put in now? Which I'll hold the control. Oh, by the way, how do you type a control Z in? It's the control key, not the cap, right? You hold the control key and the letter Z, which shows up that way. Don't type shift 6 Z, which some people don't know anything about computers would do, okay? Control Z is the control key, and it looks like that. Now I hit enter, and the average is 24.0. Okay? Got two versions of the program, compare one with the other. Make sure you understand, we now always have a good trailer. We now have a perfectly good trailer. At the end of every piece of data, control Z. If it's in a built-in file, we don't have to put it in there. It's there automatically. If it's a file that's coming from the sky, from the keyboard, we'll have to put in the control Z at the end. Second version of that program. Make sure you understand how it works. Now, there are some statements in C that look very complicated on the face of it. If you look at this, I just spent 15 minutes explaining what that statement does, how it works, right? Not C, true, false. But it's something that is so common, we will use this so often, that when you see this, you'll immediately say, oh, I'm going to do this loop until there's nothing left to do. Right? That's what that says to you. In English, there is something called an idiom. The word idiom, I-D-I-O-M. Not idiot, but idiom. What is an idiom in English? What does that mean? An expression. For example, if I tell you it's raining cats and dogs, okay, if you're in the United States, it means it's pouring outside. But if you come from another country, I assume that in Russia they don't use the words "it's raining cats and dogs." And if an American came up to someone in Russia and saying, however you say it in Russian, "it's raining cats and dogs," it's bizarre, right? You look up and what are the cats and dogs are coming down? You know, there are a lot of such idioms in English. Okay, if someone says to you, "time flies like an arrow." Okay, it doesn't mean that someone's taking a clock and using a bow to shoot the clock, but it means, you know, time moves forward, don't waste time, or your grandmother tells you, when are you going to give me grandchildren? Time's moving forward, it's time to get married, you know, stop this, you know. That's what time, it's an expression, an idiom. In C, we will find many such idioms, expressions that, when you first look at them, look somewhat complicated. But you should write this down as being an idiom somewhere in your list of expressions that you're going to see over and over and over again. This particular one is used whenever we want to do a loop while there is still something left to be processed. So understand how the idioms work and then sort of sublimate it into your mind and just use them. When you see someone tells you raining cats and dogs, you get your umbrella. You don't look to see if there's crap coming down. Okay? In the same way, when you see this expression, we have to write it on a test or on a program, you should have to start thinking about not, true, false, methods. You just see it and you say, this means I want to process until there are none left. Whenever you want to do that, you would write an expression like this. So start learning and recognizing these idioms. Okay. Next, we're going to look at a totally new problem now. This is somewhat of an odd problem with a story. It turns out to be very scientifically important as well, in statistics and in physics and in all kinds of other, in biology. tell this over to you as a little story. Once upon a time, a long time ago, I think in the 1200s, in the town of Pisa, in Italy, there was a guy whose name was Fibonacci. And Fibonacci had nothing to do with himself, so one day he decided he was going to raise rabbits for a living. He opened up a rabbit farm. Because they liked rabbits. Rabbit stew was good. And he asked the following question. If I start out with one rabbit, how many rabbits will I have after 12 months? And the answer is, one rabbit, of course. I mean, you know, takes two to tango, which is another idiom in English, right? It doesn't mean that two people are dancing. Okay? So he phrased the question a little bit different. If I start with, he said to himself, I can do this in two ways. I can either say to myself, if I start with a pair of rabbits, how many rabbits will I have in 12 months? Or he said to them, we're going to assume that in this society, men are useless. I know that many women feel that even today. And we'll just assume that women can give birth without men around. Well, they don't need them, which may happen very shortly. So either which way you'd like the story, either we start with a pair of rabbits and we talk about a pair each time I say a rabbit, or we just say we assume that rabbits can give birth without men. Okay. So either way, I start out with one pair, one female. How many rabbits would I have at the end of 12 months? Can you answer that question right now? No, you need to know something about the reproductive habits of rabbits. So you go to the biology department, and you talk to them, and ask them about rabbits. So the biology department tells you something as follows. It says, this species of rabbit is born. Okay? A month later, in its second month of life, it's a teenager. In its third month of life, it reaches puberty and it gives birth. So a rabbit is born. In month one, we have one rabbit. The second month, we have how many rabbits? Still one rabbit, teenager rabbit. In the third month, how many rabbits do we have? We have two. Mommy and baby. Right? So let me write that down, because this may get a little complicated. So I start out with one rabbit in the first month. In the second month, I have one rabbit. And in the next month, I have two rabbits. By the way, how many rabbits did I have before I started in month zero? No, before, in the beginning, God created. What happened before God created? There was nothing. Right? There's not a religion class, but I told you, in month one, a rabbit appeared. Before we started the experiment, he didn't buy any rabbits. He had none. Right? Does that make sense to you? Before the experiment starts, we had nothing. Month one, he bought a baby rabbit that was born. Okay? Month two, teenage rabbit. Month three, mother, baby. So, I will do as follows. In month zero, this is the month, there was zero rabbits. In month one, there was one rabbit. In month two, there was one rabbit. In month three, there were two rabbits. Everybody with me? How many rabbits do I have the next month? Oh, I forgot to tell you a very important thing about rabbits, which I thought you knew. Once rabbits become pregnant, they give birth once every month, forever. Yeah, rabbits give birth once a month. This species of rabbits. Once they start giving birth, they give birth once a month. Okay, so again, a rabbit is born, it's before puberty, it's a child, a baby rabbit. Next month it hits its teen years, the next month it becomes a mother and gives birth. The next month it becomes a mother again and gives birth. A month after that, it becomes a mother again and gives birth. So how many rabbits do we have the next month? Yes, we're assuming one of two things. Either all the babies are female, or in this species they don't need males. Okay, and that's all there exists as females, or we're assuming that it's a pair each time. Okay, This is not really a real biological story, you understand? Okay? But in any event, so if you ask me the real details, you know, I'm going to have to get involved in the story of reproduction, and we'll leave it alone. How many rabbits will we have the next month? Let's see. Let's hold this down. Month one, we have baby rabbit. Month two, we have teenage rabbit. It can't give birth yet. Month three, teenage rabbit became pregnant and gave birth. Okay? But big sister rabbit in month three is only a teenager. It's didn't hit puberty yet. So in the next month we have three rabbits. Very good. In month four, we have three rabbits. Is everybody with me? Yes? How many rabbits do we have the next month? Five. Very good. But how did you know that? By looking at a pattern of numbers, or because you thought it through? Mommy gives birth. Mommy gives birth again. Big sister. Big sister gives birth. Right? And the mommy gives birth one more time. Is the five rabbits. Okay? So the next month there are five rabbits. Convince yourself at home that this is true. Okay. All the smart people in this room. So I said month five, that we said there are five rabbits. Good. How many rabbits are there in month six? Eight. How many of you actually figured that out with mommy, greater sister, big sister pregnancy? No, right away. How did you get that eight? You added five, three and five, and got eight. And the next one, let me just write them over again. 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8. The next number of rabbits is going to be 13. And the next one is going to be 21. And the next one after that is going to be 34. Correct? So, if this is month 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, we got to keep on going. We'll assume rabbits never die. Okay? In Star Trek, for those who are Star Trek fans, there was an episode called The Tribbles, which had these little furry little creatures that did just this. And you can see that after a few months, since they never die, they keep on giving birth once a month. Now, before long, you have a spaceship full of tribbles and there's no room for anyone else to live. And since they were cute, squeaky little things like rabbits, nobody wanted to eat them. And it was a big problem for the spaceship what to do with all these tribbles who just were harmless little, furry little type things that you buy for, you know, your girlfriend or boyfriend, you know, to have on their dresser. And so they just reproduced like this. So they actually made a Star Trek episode. In any event, and if they never die, you can see this number gets very big very quickly. Okay, this series of numbers is called the Fibonacci numbers. Fibonacci series of numbers. It's a very important series of numbers. Although I say to you in stories of, in terms of rabbits, it plays a role in music. Tones are built up this way. Flower petals, certain atomic particles. It's a very important set of numbers in statistics. There's even a journal of Fibonacci numbers. There's a very, very, mathematically, there's a very important set of numbers. For computer science, this is important because it's one of the first programs that people write. Okay, because it's a little different than we've had before. And what we want to do for next class, in class we'll do it. It's nice for you to write this at home. But we're going to write a program that prints all the Fibonacci numbers less than 1,000. Okay? That's what we want to do. We want to write a program that prints the Fibonacci numbers less than 1,000. Now, what do I want you to do at home? I want you to think about this process. Okay? Make sure you understand how these numbers are generated. And see, let me ask you a question. Give start you on a thought process. What do you have to start with? What do you have to start with? I have to start off with two things in order to do this. How do you generate each number? Well, statement in English. How do you get the next number? What do you do? You added the previous two numbers, right? The previous two numbers. That's the clue. So you got to start with what? with two numbers. So I've got to start by giving you two numbers. Once I give you those two numbers, you should be able to now generate all the whole next set of numbers. Think that through. We'll work it out when we come back on Monday.